Hi, my name's Megan Spencer. I'm a broadcaster and a podcast maker. I guess you could call me a remembrance advocate as well. I recently made a six-part podcast series called From a Whisper to a Bang for the Australian War Memorial last year. And recently I was invited to interview three different people for the Shrine in Victoria for their 75th anniversary of the end of the Second World War with VP Day for the 15th of August this year.
Hello, Megan, and welcome back to Service Voices. We've run your beautiful podcasts From a Whisper to a Bang previously. I love that you have styled yourself a remembrance advocate, and that explains you just to a T. You are not a veteran in your own right. What got you involved in veteran issues?
Well, it's weird. I just kind of stumbled into it. When I was living in Berlin, I decided to go and visit some of the sites where my grandfather was interned as a prisoner of war in various Stalags or prisoner of war camps over there. And it just kind of flowed along from there. And I really got immersed in that for a couple of years, and I haven't come out of it. So I'm sort of, it's become quite an interest and a passion of mine, you could say, Helen.
And now you've got this fantastic project funded by the State Government of Victoria that sounds quite fascinating. Victoria Remembers. What's it about?
That's right. Well, look, I've only been involved in one part of it. The Shrine of Remembrance approached me to see if I might like to interview three different people for this particular video project that they wanted to produce. Their project partners for it are the National Trust of Victoria, Open House Melbourne. So they had a couple of other project partners, and it's under this bigger umbrella, as you referred to, that the State Government of Victoria is funding, which is called Victoria Remembers 2020. So this 75th anniversary of the end of the Second World War, which is happening pretty much now, 75 years from that momentous occasion. So they approached me to ask me if I'd like to interview three people, two living World War II veterans, Mac Ford and Jim Paisis. Mac being in the Air Force, Jim in the Navy. And I suggested that they might like to interview Auntie Glenda Humes, who's the eldest living daughter of Captain Reginald Saunders, who was in the Army in World War II and a very famous Australian soldier who was at the time the first known Aboriginal person to be commissioned as an officer in the Australian military. I thought she might bring another interesting perspective to this story and to the experiences of the end of the Second World War 75 years ago, to, you know, share her father's story and speak on behalf of her family's experience as well.
And she's a great speaker and really passionate about making sure that those Indigenous stories are heard and recorded.
Absolutely, 100% spot on there. She's a wonderful speaker. She's very empathetic. She's very compassionate, and she has a broad view. And she's an insider, really, you could say, Helen, because, you know, obviously growing up with her dad being such a famous Australian soldier and also well-known Aboriginal person in the country as well, and a great advocate for the rights of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people himself over his lifetime. She also has lots of relatives who are involved in the Australian military and various defence forces. She was married to a gentleman who served. So she's got a great insider's point of view. So she can speak from that insider's point of view and also give a broader point of view as well, as somebody who really understands what happened on that island of Crete as well during World War II, because her father, Reginald, was on that island for 11 months after the German occupation and managed to get off. Gunditjmara man from southwestern Victoria, a long way from home, but he was protected and hidden by a Cretan family and managed to get off that island after 11 months and then go back to Australia and reunite with the 2nd 7th Battalion and then go to New Guinea and serve there. And that's where he became a commissioned officer. So, look, all of them have got remarkable stories, put it that way.
Mac Ford has a connection with South Australia. What was that?
Yeah, that's right. So Mac, he became a flight rigger, did his initial training in Victoria where he enlisted, and then he was transferred to RAF base Malala in South Australia, working on Avro Anson's at the service flying training school there. So that's where he first got to meet an aeroplane, he told me. That's his words. And eventually he did a bit of time in Sydney. I think he did some training there, and then he moved north beyond Brisbane to be posted at the 99 Squadron at Leyburn. And he was working on Liberators there, and also with number 200 flight in John Dalian in Queensland as well, adapting Liberators for hush-hush missions behind enemy lines in the Southwest Pacific. So he had a very interesting career. He didn't leave Australia as such, but he did a lot of work with ground crew and, you know, adapting and readying all these planes for the Air Force to use in various missions, mostly in the Pacific.
Were very tumultuous times. You know, the whole world was turned upside down. Now, at the end of the war, Mac was involved with repatriating prisoners of war from Changi to Australia. What happened there?
He was indeed, Helen, and this is one of the most moving parts of his story that you hear in the video. So Mac was around 21 at that time, and, you know, young men like him were being brought back to Australia, ex-prisoners of war from Changi, and he got to see them pretty much, you know, straight off the plane after their own liberation very soon thereafter, possibly before the rest of Australia, the news had hit of what had gone on there. And he was very, very moved by that. And it was, I think, one of the things he was most proud of in his service, just being able to help these guys, same age, look just like him, probably coming from, you know, homes and small towns and families just like his own. And what was happening was they were coming back into Darwin, which is where he ended up with, I think it was 99 Squadron. He also worked on Catalina flying boats after the war had ended up there as well. So his job was to help disperse these men who'd come back, these ex-prisoners of war from Changi to wherever they lived in Australia, and they'd be, you know, sent back to, I guess, a capital city and then go home. So it was a very, very moving part of the interview, really, and I have to confess to you that I broke down at one point. I think Mac thought I was a bit nuts, but just hearing those kind of stories, especially wearing headphones right in your ears, it's very intimate, and you can't help but be moved by these kinds of stories.
Indeed you can't. I've shed many a tear myself. You just can't help it. Now, the third of your interviewees was a Navy chap.
That's right, yes. I mean, war is a terrible thing, isn't it, Helen? So you can't help but be moved by this. It's and also just the resilience of people who continue to go on in the face of such hardship and under such difficult conditions and terrible circumstances. It always moves me. But, yes, the third person is Jim Paisis. He grew up in Carlton. He was born to Greek parents. And he told me that he wanted to be an officer because he really liked the gold buttons on the naval uniforms. He didn't want to be in the army. So he managed to get into the Navy, and he got himself some gold stripes and gold buttons pretty quickly because he was sent on to wartime officers training school not long after he enlisted. And he mostly served on corvettes, Helen. He was on the HMAS Glenelg initially, and then he became a gunnery officer on the Colac. And the corvettes, from what Jim told me, they mostly patrolled the coasts of Australia. So he did a lot of time patrolling the east coast of Australia and then eventually made his way up to the Pacific and onto the Solomon Islands. And he has a remarkable story of his own, of course, because you know, he was on a corvette, and they're not very big. They're a corvette, but they're a small vessel anyway, and there's about 80 crew on board. And they were patrolling a particularly narrow channel and on an island, I believe is called Choiseul. That's the way he pronounced it anyway. And as they were coming out of a channel, they got shelled by an armoured shore battery, a Japanese army shore battery, fired off some shells, and it hit them and killed a couple of his shipmates and injured two others. And it landed smack bang in the engine room and, you know, blew up the engine. they managed to keep it going, but it was taking on water. So it was very, very touch and go for him and the crew for some time. And they ended up getting towed back to Sydney. But I think that was quite a traumatic incident for them all. And one, of course, that he has never forgotten and he retells at any opportunity. But it's just fascinating, all these different experiences that all these people have in wartime, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. Now, when you say shrine, you're talking about the Melbourne Shrine of Remembrance on St Kilda Road.
That's right, yes, the Shrine of Victoria. They gave me a call and said, do you want to do it? And it was just a delight to speak to all three about the, you know, various memories around this momentous moment, the end of the Second World War, 75 years ago. I think it's remarkable that I'm here at least to witness it, I guess, like witness this moment, this particular anniversary. I mean, I know anniversaries, especially in military history, are a dime a dozen, but I actually think this is a really big one. And not just because it was the end of the war for Australia and the world, but I also think it's really important to remember what happened with the Japanese people as well, those horrendous atomic bombs being dropped on them. I think that's something that we really need to deeply reflect on. And hopefully, Helen, big fingers crossed here that we learn from these terrible acts that occur during wartime that cause so much suffering.
We can only hope. Now, where can listeners view these beautiful videos or listen to the podcasts?
Well, the videos went online a couple of days ago, Helen, exactly on the 15th of August, the 75th anniversary of VP Day, Victory in the Pacific. So they're online now, all three of them. And the great thing is that I suggested to the Shrine, hey, you know, I know you're going to cut them down, you edit them down, but what if we released an extended audio version of each of the interviews, which they went ahead and they're very happy about doing. So Max is also online on the Shrine's website, that podcast, the audio version, and then Jim's and Auntie Glenda's will come out over the next couple of weeks. So they'll be added. The great thing is that these videos are going to be online for 12 months. So you'll be able to view them online for 12 months. And they live on a new website that's been created by the Victorian government. It's called World War II at Home. So this is the URL for it, www.iiathome.com.au. So if you just Googled World War II at Home, I'm sure it will come up. And that's where those three videos will live. They're around 20 minutes each.
Now, Megan, you've done all this during the period of COVID-19 problems right throughout Australia. How did you go, interviewing your people, but also putting it all together and getting that final product onto the shelf?
Yeah, well, it's a great question, Helen, because initially the Shrine were going to fly me to Victoria and I was going to interview people in person. Auntie Glenda lives in Queensland, so I'm guessing that wouldn't have happened. It would have been on Zoom. But at least for Mac and Jim, the hope was I was going to be able to be sitting in front of them. However, yes, COVID came and changed all that. So we've just done what everybody else has done, adapt and used technology. So what I did was I had to stay in South Australia. So I know of a fantastic podcast production house in Adelaide called Podbooth. I'd worked with them before for something else for the Shrine, and they do all sorts of different kinds of recordings, not just audio. So they were able to record a video of me speaking this end. And then we got Auntie Glenda and Jim on Zoom. So we had to also pull in relatives, kind relatives who are on standby, close family members who were able to be in the house with whoever we were speaking to. With Mac, it was a little bit different. He couldn't have anybody in his house, so I interviewed him on the phone. So what they've done in terms of editing those videos is putting photographs of Mac. There's a bit of vision of me. And with Jim, he was on Zoom, as was Auntie Glenda. So we had the Zoom video to switch between. I'm quite amazed at how well they've turned out. But of course, it's the stories that they tell and the perspectives that they bring during World War II which make it so compelling. So again, it's a really beautiful, deep listening exercise, very intimate and in your ear.
Mm. Well, I think it's a fantastic tribute to the 75th anniversary of the end of the Second World War. So well done, Megan.
Thanks so much, Helen. It was just such a privilege to be able to listen to people who had lived through, or at least have an insight into, a moment, the end of World War II, and just, you know, with everything we know about it and everything that came with it and the atrocities that came with it and the hardship and, you know, living through that, working through that, the world was a very, very different place then. So having that intimate ear in, if you like, into what that experience was like, that insight, and hearing the impressions of that time and how things had changed, especially after people got home as well, and how they did get on with their lives in whatever way or shape that took. There are very different perspectives on that with these three videos too. I just found it so amazing. You know, it was a gift for me to listen to. So I'm really hoping that it's a gift for other people to listen to as well.
And let's hope that many people learn from it as well.
That would be great. No more war. Exactly.
No more. No more. And you and I at the forefront waving our banner. No more wars. Megan, thank you very much for chatting with Service Voices today. And we look forward to hearing what projects you've got coming up in the future. So keep us advised, won't you?
I absolutely will. Thank you so much, Helen. And thanks for all the great work you do too, and keeping remembrance alive as you do each week with Service Voices.